Welcome back in everyone to a fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are so excited about today's presentation, if you will. We've got a wonderful, wonderful artist joining us. We've got the actor Darren Richardson, who's here to talk to us about LA Theater Works' presentation of Journey's End. It's a wonderful audio drama, if you will. It's really, really brilliant. And you can currently get it by visiting latw.org. We're so excited to bring you this different medium of theater, if you will, one that I personally absolutely love. So let's bring on the perfect person who can talk more about this, our guest, Darren Richardson. Darren, welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Well, thank you, Andrew. It's a pleasure to be here. Very honored to be a guest on your show.
Oh, thank you so much. The honor is all ours. I mean, I'm so excited to get to dive into this brilliant, brilliant piece that you were a part of, Journey's End. Could we start by having you tell us a little bit about this work?
Yeah, sure. So it's a play by R.C. Sheriff that was set in March 1918 in World War One, about a group of soldiers from different classes of English society that are thrown together in the final days of their command to go over the top of the trenches to, you know, proceed to the German side. So it's the sort of the camaraderie, the angst, the frustrations, the banter that you would get from that group of soldiers. And it's a much beloved play. It was made into a big movie in 2017, I believe. It's been a radio play a number of times. I think this might be the third time it's been a radio play. It's been a television adaptation in the UK. And, you know, R.C. Sheriff, who wrote it, was actually in World War One himself. So this is really how it was. He was there. I mean, when this was first performed, interestingly enough, in the role of Stanhope was a 21-year-old actor, fairly unknown at the time, called Laurence Olivier. So it's got some good people attached to it over the years, and especially so in our production.
That is fantastic. Wow, what a history this show has.
So yeah.
I'm curious to know, how is it that you came upon this piece?
Well, for me, my involvement is with LA Theatre Works. They don't really have a company of actors per se, but at the same time, they do. I would say it's a network of actors. I mean, there's been hundreds of actors that have been in performances and plays and radio shows and tours of theirs since their formation 50 years ago, which we actually celebrated this week. We had a gala, as I would say, but I believe gala is probably the more American way of saying it, this week for LA Theatre Works 50th anniversary. I've been associated with them for 17 years or so. I think 2006, 2007 was my first production with them. And, you know, I've been fortunate that over the years, they've just called, you know, they call you up and they say, you know, would you be interested in this production and this character? And, you know, and I always say yes before I even have read the part or the character, because the level of work is so high. The people you're working with are usually so amazing. The experience is a completely immersive theatrical experience, whether you're on stage doing it in front of a live audience or whether you're doing it in a studio. This particular production that we did was a studio production. So that was basically how I got involved. Annalise Erickson, the casting director, and Martin Jarvis, I have a long association with him as a director and friend, and they kind of said to me, would you be interested in playing Mason? And it's kind of, he's a wonderful little Cockney character that kind of comes into this play at the right moments to give it a bit of spark of humor in places, I would say.
Fantastic. So with this show having such a strong history, and with it having a few versions, if you will, I'm curious to know, what was it like developing this particular iteration for LA Theatre Works?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, as an actor, you know, these are questions that I have to be a little bit careful of because, you know, there's a whole creative team behind it that do a lot of work, and I can't suddenly come in and be going, well, we decided that we would do, you know. But yeah, well, the aim with all of this stuff, as I said when we were speaking off camera, as it were, or off mic, was as Martin Jarvis always says, we're creating the movie of the mind. You know, we're creating a visual, an audio production that will, you know, that will spark the imagination and the visuals in the mind. So that's always something that you have to remember, that the audience, you have to keep the audience in mind, what they're thinking, where they are, and take them on a journey with you without them getting too far ahead of you, and just serve the play to its truth, to its words. I think Martin, having done this production again, I think about 50 years ago, he had a very strong connection to it and what it was about and the direction we should take it. And it's different to other LA Theatre Works productions, I would say, because it's very, there's no music in it at all. Sometimes you'll have an underlying sound or something that comes in. And we didn't really need that because, you know, in the background, there's always I mean, maybe not the right word to use, but the chorus of war, you know, the sound of distant bombs in the background that just remind the listener that, you know, we are in the trenches of World War One. So yeah, I mean, I think our direction was to really just to serve R.C. Sheriff's amazing play, amazing words. And although this play, you know, is set, I mean, you know, 1918, we're talking over 100, you know, 100, and what is that, 107 years or something like that, 6 years, I don't even know at this stage, 106 years. That ultimately, we, even today, you know, with unmanned drones and rockets that can fly hundreds of miles, the truth of war is it really comes down to man on man or woman on woman, person on person combat in the end. In this case, you know, it was men in the trenches, but it really comes down to, you know, to take territory always is. Involves people. So this play is very relevant because, as we know, there's a number of places in the world where armed conflict is happening. And, you know, and it's not much different than it was here with this in this situation.
That is a brilliant, brilliant answer and a great lead into my next question, which of course is there a message or thought that you're hoping that listeners or audiences will take away from this piece?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not speaking for anybody else but myself here, but I think that everyone else would agree with me, including R.C. Sheriff, that it's really about the complete absurdity of war and how unnecessary it is. And I mean, for instance, that this in this play they talk about. An English soldier had been caught in no man's land, and he'd been injured. And after a day of being out there, half a day being out there, sort of groaning, the British guy said, "We don't care. We're going over, and we're going to get him." So they get up and they go over. They're dragging him back, and he's screaming because he's being dragged back. And the German officer gets up out of his trench and says, "Just carry him." So they basically the Germans. They're like, we're not going to shoot you. Carry him back and get him the medical attention he needs. You know, we're going to have a sort of ceasefire here. So they do. And then the next day, they carry on shelling and shooting each other. And, you know, we all know the story of the Christmas Eve truce where they went out and played soccer, which I actually did a short film about, went to Sundance in, I think, 2001, called Offside, which was about the truce. So it's that, you know, these men, in many other circumstances, would be, you know, they play a soccer game, they share a cigarette, but then they're going back and they're having this, you know, the next day they're shelling each other. So it's really about the absurdity and the tragedy of armed conflict.
I love that answer. That's fabulous. And I want to snowball off of that into our final question for this first part, which is, who are you hoping to have access to this production of Journey's End?
Well, for me, obviously the answer is anyone, but primarily I would like young people, students at school, those younger than 20, as it were, or people in high school, middle school, to listen to this, because it's such a major part of history. And I don't know, I don't really know. I mean, I wouldn't say, when I was growing up, it was taught a lot in our school system. And I was a member of the Army Cadets, which was sort of a roustabout, rougher version of the Boy Scouts. Boy Scouts always seemed, I don't want to tie knots. I want to shoot a gun, So I was a member of this thing called the Army Cadets. And we would actually do marches on various commemorations, wartime commemorations. We would do marches with World War One and World War Two soldiers. So I remember as a kid walking, with these men at the front. It would be World War One soldiers at the front. Obviously, there weren't as many of them even then. That's sort of the 80s. And then after that, you'd have the World War Two survivors, veterans. And then you would have, the various groups, and it would be us as well. So I always had a keen interest in this stuff, and it would really be for people, young people, to get an idea of this, and also for anybody to really hear it. I mean, there's something for everyone in this play, because it you can't not be moved by it, and it's about our connection to humanity and what's right. And I think it's really important for people just to be aware of history. We live in an age where there's so much technology, there's so much access to so much information. And I don't know if I'm wrong, but I personally feel, and I know some other people that I talked to somebody else recently about this, I'm making a documentary and they talked about it, that we have all this information, but it's really hard to get the truth, and it's really hard to find the information you want. I feel that it really serves history, and it really serves the truth for people to listen, to find this and to listen to it. And I hope that young people do, but I hope everybody gets to listen to it, because I think anybody that's known someone in a wartime situation, or anyone who has a connection to it in any way, or anyone who just has a general interest in the history of the world, in that time period, and the ramifications of it that lead even to today, would get a, we'll take a listen to it.
The second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pick your brains, if you will. And I would love to start with our regular first question, which is, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites?
Well, lots of stuff, really. I love, as a playwright, Oscar Wilde. In fact, I think you might have noticed my email is Oscar Wilde. So I think he was just a genius. I love his work. I love Joe Wharton. I thought he was just incredible. Loot. And I got a chance to be in a production of What the Butler Saw a few years ago. And that was great stuff. Actors, I love actors like, I don't know if you know an actor called Dirk Bogarde, who was, if you looked him up, you would recognize him. He was in, he's in hundreds of films, as it were, and actually a survivor of World War II, and very, very much a pacifist, and wrote about it and talked about it a lot. Just such a great actor. And there's some good interviews on YouTube I would encourage young actors to look at, because he talks about the relationship to the camera. He talks about when he was first on a set and he had no idea what he was doing. And the cinematographer came over to him and said, you've not got a clue, have you? And he said, I'm sorry? He said, you've not got a clue. And he said, look, I'm going to tell you in 5 minutes. This is a camera. This is a boom mic. That over there is a grip. This is, and he basically gave him the 5 to 10 minute rundown of this is how this machine works. That camera there is just not a mechanical device, you know, or a photography device. It's capturing your emotions. So make sure, you know, make sure your eyes are telling the truth, because it's going to pick up on the truth, especially when it's 50 foot tall on the cinema screen. So I love Dirk Bogarde for that stuff. I love an actor called Leonard Rossiter, who was in some of Stanley Kubrick's films. He was in 2001 A Space Oddity, and he was also in Barry Lyndon, and he's just a really, really good actor. I love Alfred Molina. I always liked his work, and luckily I've become friends with him through working with him at LA Theatre Works. You know, my dear friend Julian Sands I was always a fan of his, and I sort of manifested just by being a, you know, loving his work and everything like that. We eventually just, again, through LA Theatre, actually through the BBC and then later LA Theatre Works, we worked together and we became good friends. These are all actors I personally looked up to and admired. I love Stephen Berkoff as well, East End writer of plays and books and an actor as well. Kind of popular over here in the 80s as a criminal. He always played one of those Russians, you know, he's always one of those guys like, you know, we are going to blow it all up. You know, he's always one of those guys, you know, always plays a villain, but he was always great. And he's an amazing actor. He did a show called Shakespeare's Villains that I saw here at the Odyssey Theatre 20 years ago, 25 years ago, I think. And I was like, oh, wow, this guy's just so, so good. So yeah, it's a mixed bag. Oh, I'll tell you who I really love, and I can't ever say his name. There's a German actor called Franz, Rogowitz or something. I can never say his name. He was in A Hidden Life, the Terrence Malick film. I love Terrence Malick as a director as well as a film director. He's just so good. His films are amazing. But I'm going to look up this actor as I'm talking to you, because he's just so good. But they're some of the people I like. Yeah, I'm going to give you the spelling of his last name. So it's Franz, Franz, and his last name is Rogowski. I haven't seen anything that he's done that hasn't been amazing. He's just incredible. So I love him as an actor. But that's and then I like the people that I, you know, that I work with in this production. You know, I'm going to read off some of their names. I mean, I know them all, but I've just, you know, James Callis, dear friend of mine. He's great in it. Josh Carl worked with him before. He's really good. Jack Cutmore Scott, he was Stanhope in this. Amazing performance. He's on Frasier right now as the son. Ian Ogilvy, love Ian. You know, he was the saint after Roger Moore was the saint back in the day, and he's one of the gang that we know and one of our friends. Simon Templeman, Matt Wolf's like a brother to me. We work together often in these things. Tobias Egveria, I think his last name is. He was really good. This was his first LA Theatre Works radio production. He did a really, really good job. So they're my favourite actors. And you have to say the most recent actors you work with. So I had to say them as well. And Martin Jarvis, of course, who's an incredible actor. Al Pacino, love Al Pacino. Everybody loves Al Pacino. Got a chance to work with him and it was incredible. So there you go. I didn't really mention any female actresses or actors. Sarah Drew, who works at LA Theatre Works a lot. I think she's in Grey's Anatomy. My mind just went blank, but it'll come back to me. I'm going to come back to you with some female actresses so I don't just say, I'm not just representing the men.
I love that list, though. That's some incredible names there. Some wonderful artists I'm going to have to look into just based on your recommendation. So that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, what is your favorite part about working in the theater?
It's always great to be on stage. It's always great to be in front of a live audience. It's always great to be, it's, you know, it's the ultimate truth, you know. There's no second takes on a stage, as it were. The camaraderie of working with other actors, the fear factor of it, you know, the adrenaline. The moment, you know, we did a play with LA Theatre where it's called Top Secret, Battle for the Pentagon Papers. And we were in China. We toured China with it. And it's a play about press freedom. And we were touring China and we were at the Beijing Grand National Theatre, first American play ever performed there. And we were performing on stage and I'm playing one of the characters that sort of breaks the story. It's all about Nixon and Watergate and we kind of get a breakthrough and I stand on this chair and I start talking about, we didn't just do this for us, we did this for the little man and we did that. So I start doing this and they did tell us when we start doing a kind of a rousing speech or something that's about, you know, the common man, the Chinese audience, they're not like English audiences, or at least they weren't then. This was 2013. They're going to take photos. They're going to be blasting flashes. They're going to be, which now they might be doing in an American audience, but at the time they weren't. And I remember doing this speech and I suddenly looked down and the actress next to me, Emily O'Hara, who's one of my favorite actresses. There we go. I got another one in. She was crying. And I looked across and I saw Gregory Harrison and he was weeping. And I looked across to Nicholas Hoorman and he was weeping. And I was going, oh, what's happening here? What's happening? And then I realized I was in this, we were in this moment where this was actually happening. And that there was a mythical, we were in a ceremonial space and we were creating magic. And it was shamanic and it was incredible. And I just was so lost at that moment. And so no part of me was inside of me. I was just completely a witness to it. And I was operating purely on the muse that had taken over me, as were all the actors on that stage at that moment. And I went after, you know, I'd been an actor for, that's 2013, and I've been an actor for many years. I mean, I started sort of acting like 90. I mean, I went to college to study acting sort of 1990 to 92. So ever since then, I've been some sort of performer in some way. And I just went, oh, this is it. This is it. This is the moment. This is nirvana. This is euphoria. This is what I've been searching for. This is what they all talk about. And you know what? Ever since then, I've been searching for that again. And it's just, that was it for that moment. And, you know, we walked out of that theater afterwards and the theater was on the edge of Tiananmen Square and it was lightning blasting and rain storming down. And I said, oh, it seemed like we had awakened the gods. That's how it seemed. Now, I know that's very dramatic and that's an actor's story. But I will tell you, that's how it felt at that moment.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. Wow, what an experience that had to have been. And incredibly, that's a beautiful lead-in to my favorite question to ask guests, and that is, what is your favorite theater memory?
You know, it would be that moment. That I don't think anything could top that. It was, everything was going on all cylinders. You know, we had dignitaries in the audience. That was just an incredible moment. But there's been lots of others as well with LA Theatre Works. I think it's always interesting. Like, I loved when we did Pride and Prejudice. We toured it. And, you know, I usually play many characters. Like, I'm playing Utility. So I'm playing five different characters. You know, I'll come on 1 minute and I'm, you know, I say over there, and then the next minute, oh, I said nice to see you, you know, and then, all right, love, how are you? You know, so the man of a million voices, as it were. But I remember going from Bingham. I had a line where I was, you know, Bingham in Pride and Prejudice, Mr. Bingham, and then I was Mr. Bingley. Sorry, got it right in the end. The Jane Austen fans in the audience were just, steam was coming out of their ears there, and then I was Mr. Wickham on the next line. And I had to literally, I say the line, I spin around, I put a jacket on and I'm Bingley and then I'm Wickham. And in that split second of spinning around and putting a jacket on, I would always go, I don't know if they're going to buy this. <You know? laughs> And they always would. They would. And because I believed it. then if I believed it, they believed it. And it was like that. It's that. It's that we're in this space, which is, you know, we talked about technology earlier, like, you know, leave your phones outside, people, and be transported to another place. I mean, the fact that, you know, that's for me as well. You know, you can, you're a time traveler. If you're an actor or if you're a theater patron, you are traveling through time. You can be anywhere. You can be in Vienna in the 1800s. You can be in, you know, Lemuria on some distant planet. You can be anywhere. You can be at any time. You can be, and with this play, you are, with Journey's End, you are in the trenches with these men. You are in their dugout in 1918. So yeah, that's another long-winded answer for you.
Love that, though. That is wonderful. That is spectacular. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
As we wrap things up, I would love to know, do you have any other projects or productions coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
Yes, lots of things happening. I would encourage people to go and check out LA Theatre Works. Their website is latw.org. The production we talked about, you can get it, download it for $4.99. You can get, you can subscribe to their channel, I think, for, I can't even remember, I think it's like $14.99. I think it's $9.99 a month or something like that. 75 audio plays up there right now. They change them as well. We have an audio library of 600. So I'd ask them to check out that. Follow them on Instagram at LA Theatre Works. For me, currently, a show I did a few years ago, a TV show, is on Amazon Prime right now. It's called The Baxters. That's, I'm in season two playing Professor Rosenberg. I'm working on a documentary right now called The Bishop of Hollywood about this mystical Hungarian man called Stefan Heller, who's 93 very shortly, and lived through World War II and lived through the communist takeover of Hungary and escaped to the United States and met so many. He was in touch with so many amazing people in Hollywood during his life, you know, people like Aldous Huxley and what have you. So I'm making a documentary about him. And I'm not sure what else is coming up, but whatever. I've got a little film out, which I did with another actress that I must mention because she's my partner, Elizabeth Port. We did a film called Locked In, which is a short film, which is currently doing the rounds at horror film festivals. And Joanne Whalley, that's another actress that I've worked with a ton that I love. Moira Quirk, how could I forget Moira Quirk? She's a great actress. Ellis Greer, they're all coming to me now. In that moment where I was just saying all these male names and freaking out. Paula Jane Newman, another wonderful actress. Yeah, so anyway, I got some actresses in on the end of there. So that's what's happening. That's what's going on with me. That's, so we're excited about all of these things. And I'm doing a bit of writing as well, which, and we're going to see where that leads. I've, you know, as an actor, you're always zooming from project to project or rushing around trying to make things happen. And I thought, oh, if I just sit down and wrote some things, I might be able to. That might be another avenue. So we're doing some writing as well. That's what I would say to young actors or anyone listening to this. Your greatest asset is to have as many different facets to your career as you can do. If you can do voiceover, if you can do on camera, if you can do, you know, commercials, say yes to the work, because, you know, work begets work, and you will, you know, it's a good thing to do. So like you say, iron's in the fire, have as much as you can do.
Yes. And that leads to my final question, which is, if our listeners would like more information about Journey's End or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Well, I mean, you know, they could contact your podcast and you could forward them my email or something like that if you wanted. I'm happy to do that if someone has a specific question. Or I am on Instagram, although I kind of have had a bit of sabbatical and not posted on there in a couple of years, but I'm thinking about changing that. And my Instagram is at the Daz Dazzler. That's the DAZDAZZLER. And I check the messages. You can contact me there. For LA Theatre Works, as I said already, latw.org or at LA Theatre Works. And you know, if you can't find them, just Google LA Theatre Works and it will come up. And yeah, I would encourage people to follow them because they're doing great work. And you know, live audio dramas, in studio audio dramas, and once a year a great tour which goes around the whole country. And it's amazing when we're touring the country how many people come and see the shows and say, "We listened to you. We heard you in this. We heard you in that." You know, we're broadcast. This play was broadcast on radio around the country, I think 2-3 weeks ago. So it's already got great legs. You know, it's broadcast around national public radio stations across the country and in various parts of the world as well. So it's off to a flying start already. And the reviews have been amazing of it. And I've done a lot of shows at LA Theatre Works. I think I'm up to 32 or 33. And this is definitely in my top five, if not, well, I would say top three. But it's a really, really special production with an amazing cast. And I must just say, you know, we had some Neil Wogensen, the engineer, Mark Holden, sound designer, Charles, who mixed it. We've got some great people who are behind the scenes that make the magic happen. Annalise Erickson, and the top of the chain is Susan Loewenberg, who has been the captain of the LATW ship for 50 years.
Wonderful. Well, Darren, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me, for sharing not only this fabulous show, but just all of your insight into the arts. This truly has been wonderful. I appreciate everything you've shared today. And most importantly, I thank you so much for your time.
Well, Andrew, it's been a pleasure. You're doing great work. And I love the fact that this podcast is out there and that you're a champion of the arts and theater. And I wish you all the best with it. And I will come back on your show anytime you will have me.
Oh, thank you so much for those kind words. The door is wide open. You come on in anytime you'd like.
You might regret saying that, you know, when you turn on your Zoom tomorrow and I'm like, I'm ready for the next phase of talking about myself.
I love it. Yes, yes. My guest today has been the incredible actor Darren Richardson, who sat down to chat with us about LA Theatre Works' presentation of Journey's End. You can now listen to it. You can go on to the website latw.org and purchase it for listening. We also have some other contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting in our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But truly, head over to latw.org, get this audio drama, this brilliant piece of theater. It's going to move you. It's going to challenge you. It really is a fantastic story. I myself cannot wait to listen in on it. So anybody who's riding the subway, if you see me looking pensive, that's why. But get yourself this beautiful audio work, Journey's End, available at latw.org. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.